Hi, neighbors. This is Long John with the Party Line. We're around from midnight to 5:30, 6 mornings during the week. Monday mornings, we get started about 1. We continue through till 5:30, and that means we're around for 37 and a half hours a week. During the past week or last week, I mentioned quite often that we would have what I consider to be a very, very exciting discussion this morning. Or maybe you think we're still in Monday. Actually, we're into Tuesday morning already. First, let me bring you up to date. Major Donald E. Kehoe, United States Marine Corps flyer retired and author of 3 books on UFOs, commonly called flying saucers, and presently director of National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena of Washington, D.C., was a guest on the Armstrong Circle Theater Wednesday night, the 22nd of January, 1958. If you've been listening to the Party Line, you certainly remember that we discussed that particular telecast. We spent a lot of time on it. Now, the show was scripted, and all guests and professional performers appearing thereon are supposed to undergo 2 days of rehearsal and then read their lines from teleprompters. On the program with Major Kehoe were first its senior writer, who sat in as a guest for Mr. Kenneth Arnold, because Arnold refused to appear after the last rehearsal. Now, Major Kehoe was allotted about 5 minutes immediately after the Air Force representative read from his teleprompter several statements that would confirm the existence of UFOs. Well, now, wait a moment. At this point, some people may be a little confused. You may be under the impression that I have made the statement that the Air Force representative led people to believe that there's an existence of UFOs. Actually, it was Major Kehoe's opinion. In fact, I think that he implied that these UFOs are coming from outside this Earth. Now, Major Kehoe concluded his allotted time for the final 20 seconds with an ad-lib statement that was not in the script. Now, this statement was monitored from the air by at least 2 private citizens and recorded by them on tape. Unfortunately, it was inaudible to the average listener due to the volume having been cut down almost to the minimum at some physical point between the microphone being used by Major Kehoe and the TV transmitter then being used. Now, this could have been at any one of several points. However, this is what I consider to be very important. Kehoe's statement, which faded at the 13th word, was finally cut off. Now, this is quite different technically from a fade. Actually, it was cut off 2 words before the end. Now, I have been told, and I hope I am not wrong, but to bring you up to date, this is supposed to be part of the statement that you heard and part of the statement that you didn't hear, which you may be hearing for the first time this morning. Kehoe made this statement: "I would like to make a disclosure that has never been revealed to the public." Now, at this point, fade began. In other words, the microphone seemed like, just like at home, if somebody got up to your volume control and turned it down slowly. Now, according to 2 private citizens, possibly many more, but 2 of them that knew enough how to record this, even at that low volume, told me that this was the balance of the statement. I will read it for you. "For the last 6 months, our committee has been working with a Senate committee which is investigating UFOs. If the hearings are held in open hearing, I feel it will prove beyond doubt that the flying saucers are real. In order to secure the information we need, we suggest that all of the citizens write to, and at this point, there was a true cut. There was absolutely no sound. Now, according to a lip reader that contacted me, I've been told that the last two words were, "Your congressman." Now, no sooner had the video cut to Douglas Edwards, who was the MC of the show, when the telephones began to ring. Now, actually, a large number of viewers wanted to know what Kehoe had said, and they also wanted to know what had happened. Many of them, naturally, were crying censorship. And within hours, a series of statements were issued to the wire services. Most of them attributed to CBS spokesmen. And also a phone report was made by Irving Tunick, the writer of the show who sat in for Kenneth Arnold. And of course, actually, I'm the one that received that report. Now, I've got a lot of things to sort of straighten out with you first so that you'll know exactly what took place on that telecast. And of course, we'll hear statements from Major Kehoe and from many of the other people, but before we get into that part of the discussion, let me take just a moment to talk about one of our sponsors, And you know, you don't have to worry about a college degree. This is now in just 16 weeks. There's no long lectures because you learn by doing, just jockeying. Please keep that in mind. Now, before we get back with our discussion, and I might add that we'll be hearing from Cortland Hastings, Jules B. St. Germain, Major Kehoe. In case you're not aware of this, Major Kehoe is director of NICAP. That's National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. And they're located at 1536 Connecticut Avenue, Washington, 6, D.C. This is a nonprofit organization. Now, before we get back into the discussion, and I would suggest to you to call your friends and neighbors and tell them to join us tonight in 710. At 710 in your dial. This is WOR Radio, your station in New York. It's important to have them with us because this is a very, very important discussion this morning. Now, let me take just a moment to talk about the beautiful Golden Thread Cafe in the... Believe me, that was a very, very exciting night because I know according to the letters and telegrams that I received, people were very, very concerned about the fact that Major Kehoe had been cut off. That was Wednesday night, the 22nd of January. Now, we went on with the party line at midnight that night. I don't know if you call it that night or the following morning, but just in a matter of seconds, we were into the morning of January the 23rd. And we discussed that Armstrong Circle Theater telecast. It was sort of a documentary. It was about flying saucers. And I was quite amazed why Mr. Kenneth Arnold did not show up. But however, about 2:15 or 2:30, the morning of January 23rd, I received a telegram from Irv Tunick. Now, Mr. Tunick was the writer of the Armstrong Circle Theater for that particular telecast. Irv Tunick. Now, let me read the telegram. I have it in front of me now. It's addressed to Long John Neville Radio Station, WOR New York. K, that's a funny thing. K, I wonder what K stands for. Well, it's... Now, as a writer of Armstrong Circle Theater, extremely anxious to give you all the facts on the Kehoe incident. Have been up since 5. Am in need of sleep badly. Would appreciate your call if you really want authentic report. Now, at that time, when I received that telegram, I contacted Mr. Irv Tunick at his home. I might also say, in the telegram, he included his home phone number, which I have deleted because I don't think it should be given out on the air. Now, We recorded that conversation. It was a beeper phone conversation. And so that you can be brought up to date what Mr. Tunick had to say about that particular telecast, we're going to play that back for you right now. Do you have that set up, Tommy? All right, let's hear that telephone conversation that I had with Irv Tunick, the writer of the Armstrong Circle Theater, on the morning of January 23rd.
Hello.
Hello.
Mr. Tunick.
How are you? I'm awful glad you called because I'm awful tired.
Fine. Mr. Tunick, you know we're on the air on a beeper phone.
That's quite all right.
Is that all right, sir?
Certainly.
Fine. And unfortunately, I did not get your number. I had no knowledge of your call until this very moment when the telegram was delivered to me. All right, Mr. Tunick, are you aware of the fact that we've been talking about it tonight?
Oh, yes. I caught it coming home from the studio in my car.
Uh-huh.
And I got home about 12:25.
Mm-hmm.
Called at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And very honestly, I've been up ever since. It's a strain.
Yeah, I can understand. Well, I'm sorry. I did not get that information.
Surely.
Well, what actually happened, Mr. Tunick?
Well, let me give you the details. First of all, let me correct a few things that... Evidently, reports coming to you are not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, to my knowledge, Captain Ruppelt is not in town.
To your knowledge, Ruppelt is not in town.
No, the last conversation we had with Captain Ruppelt was that he could not get a leave of absence from his position in California.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for that reason, in the main, that he was not on the program. It was purely on his part. We originally did ask him to come and... We would have liked to have had him.
Oh, well, there is... I hope that I did not imply that you did not invite him.
Mm-hmm.
It was told to me that he was invited and that he was billed. In other
yes,
words, that
correct.
Was on the, he was programmed, but I have been told, and this I do not know from Ruppelt, but I have been told that he did not want to go on the program the last minute that he sent a wire and canceled.
I have no knowledge of any such wire. In my conversation with Captain Ruppelt, he expressed rather an eagerness to come on the program.
Mm-hmm.
So I know nothing further about any telegrams, if any, did arrive.
Mm-hmm.
And as to his being in town, if he is, it's a surprise to me. The last I know, I spoke to him in California.
Kenneth Arnold is in town, is
yes,
that right,
Mr.
sir?
Mr. Arnold came into town Monday.
I see.
We brought him into town from Boise, Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
We had previously, over a period of a couple of weeks, made arrangements for him and his wife. We brought them both in. We put them up here in New York.
Yes.
He appeared at rehearsal for 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
This morning, we received a telegram that he would not appear. And he did not appear. As a result, I had a pinch hit, you know. I kind of sat in for him.
Mr. Tunick, may I ask you this question?
Sure.
Did he say in his telegram why he didn't want to appear?
Well, very honestly, and I'm being extremely honest, I did not see a copy of the telegram.
Fine.
I understand that he sent a telegram to the producer and to newspapers around town, giving his reasons. I believe he felt that there was not enough time being given to his side of the story.
Uh-huh.
Now, in that regard, we have a signed statement from Major Keogh, in which he states that our program was handled objectively and fairly, and that...
Was this a statement that was signed after the program, sir?
No, it was a statement that was signed much before the program went on the air when we heard that Mr. Arnold would not appear.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
Now, as to the very, what shall we call it, the sad incident that occurred, I work very closely with Major Kehoe, and if you call him incidentally, I don't want to mention where he's staying, but I have that information, and I can get it to you. I'm sure he'll...
No, don't give it on the air.
No, I won't.
Because we're on the air now. You
yes,
know.
Yes, I won't do it. But he will verify what I'm saying you now. I worked with him very hard. He cooperated with me beautifully, and I think I did the script more or less as he wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
When he went on the air, he began to make the statement, as quoted by yourself and Mr. Sanderson, is it?
Yes, Ivan Sanderson.
That's right. He did make that statement. At that time, the director and the producer, working under CBS regulations, had to flip the key and cut the audio because we did not know what statement was coming out. The statement had not been approved by a continuity acceptance, as you know, must be done on network shows. We did not know if the Senate subcommittee he mentioned had approved his statement. And in view of that fact, and as I say, by regulation, they had to cut the speech. And no one felt worse about it than the people attached to the program.
Well, then, naturally, the next question that I would normally ask, I cannot ask because you're not going to give it to me anyway. In other words, you would not be in a position to tell me what he said during the time that the mic was cut off.
No, I would not be in a position. I do know that following the show, INS called, and he did give them the statement. And he also, after the program, again signed another statement.
Yes.
In which he stated that he regretted the incident. He was not aware of these regulations. He had been permitted a certain amount of ad-lib during the course of his presentation, and he did not realize that a statement such as this did not fall into the ad-lib category.
Mr. Tunick, I am a Johnny come lately in this business.
I am much more lately in the flying saucer business.
I was never familiar with that ruling.
Well,
I mean, we don't have it in radio anyway. Are you saying then that if I were to be interviewed by somebody on television,
no,
that we would have to have a prepared interview?
No. When you have an interview program, obviously it's an ad-lib program. But when a program is scripted, it must pass through continuity acceptance. Now, you know that as well as I do. And all of the material is placed on teleprompter, you see. Now, obviously, no one expects anyone to follow a teleprompter word by word. There is a certain latitude given. However, and put yourself in this position if you're the producer or the director.
Yes.
The statement comes out, I am now going to say something that has never been revealed before. You don't know what that statement is. You have no idea if it's been cleared by the proper authorities who are being mentioned. It has not been cleared by continuity acceptance. You are at the mercy of the person who is making the statement. And it's a general rule that at that time the director has no prerogative but to cut the show. Now, this is a fact, and we felt awful about it. This is not a matter of censorship.
Yes.
As it turned out, I believe the statement was fairly innocuous. And possibly might have gone just the way, you know, on the air. But
in other words, it was not a world-shattering statement.
No, I don't think it was.
Well, you heard the statement. I'm not asking you to repeat it.
I didn't hear the statement. No, I was in the control room.
Oh, you didn't hear it?
No, you see, we cut the audio and we lost it in the control room.
Oh, yes, that's true. I didn't realize that. Yes.
So that I do know that following the show, the INS called, and he gave them the statement. But it was strictly a matter of routine.
I
mean, it was not a question of any type of censorship. As a writer, I'm very much sensitive the points of censorship. And I can assure you that this does not enter into it one little bit. Nor did the Air Force in any way control our program. The original idea for the program was our own. We set about it just as we set about any other program. We were very pleased when the Air Force offered us cooperation, when they opened their files to us. As a matter of fact, I had the files in my home for a number of days, working on the show.
Mr. Tunick, I had just one more question.
Yes,
in
but
my
before
mind,
your question,
yes,
may I just correct one other statement?
Yes.
Mr. Sanderson said it was cut off for a minute and a half. It was cut off for exactly 18 seconds.
18 seconds.
That's right.
I think, I don't know if Mr. Sanderson made the statement. I know that I made it before. I thought it was approximately a minute and a half, and I apologize. I was not timing it, believe me.
Now, if you would like to get Mr. Kehoe's statement that he signed following the program.
Yes.
That statement would be available to you tomorrow if you call Talent Associates, the producers of the show.
What is the...
Talent Associates.
Talent Associates.
Yes. Their address is 41 East 50th.
41 East 50th.
I won't give the phone number because
I don't
think we should.
No. I can find that out. All right. I was just wondering... why? In other words, I'm certainly not being critical because I'm not a critic. But I was just wondering why on a program that was a documentary program and you had so many different angles of the flying saucers involved, how is it that somebody like Adamski or Van Tassel or, you know, one of the people who have made the the claim that they've had a physical contact with Martians or Venusians. How is it one of those were not put in?
Well, a very good reason, because we were suffering under what might be called a stringency of time.
I see.
After all, Don Keogh does make the point, and I think a valid point, that he did not have equal time with the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
That was not because of any other reason except time.
Yes.
We had to cut 12 minutes out of the show.
Mm-hmm.
After our first draft.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only reason, because we have no axe to grind. We were trying to prepare an objective and impartial program.
Mr. Tunick, another question comes to my mind then. If you had planned on having Kenneth Arnold on the program, we know that Repelt, he couldn't get away from his job, but you did bring Mr. and Mrs. Arnold into New York.
Yes, he did.
And they were going to be on the program. Well, what
No, he was going to be on the program.
I mean, he was going to. I'm sorry, sir. He was going to be on the program. What happened to the time that he was going to have on the program?
I pinch hit. I sat in for him because it was done. You see, we had no notification of this.
I see.
He sent us a telegram, which arrived about 1 o'clock this afternoon.
I'm familiar with the telegram.
That's right. And we were caught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after all, we're all on teleprompter. Everything is set in the show. We were ready to go into our run-through.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, one of our guests just doesn't appear.
Right.
Well, what do? We kind of jerry-rigged it. I sat in for him, and I read the lines.
Right.
As we could. And we felt very badly about it. We do think that, in all fairness, we should have been informed at least in person, not to be informed by a telegram. I don't think your service was done to anyone in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Tunick, I have on this beeper phone an 8-second delay.
Go ahead.
And some of my guests here are only hearing our conversation now. They're picking it up. So if you give me just a second or two, I just want to see if any of the others, they have headsets on. That's the way they listen to it. And I just want to find out if there's anything else that possibly Ivan or Charles Leadham or any of the other guests would like to ask.
Sure.
One question that Ivan Sanderson has raised. Why wasn't Arnold's name mentioned by the Air Force?
By the Air Force?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why his name wasn't mentioned by the Air Force.
The only reason that I think that Ivan brought that question up is the fact that he was former head of the United States Air Force Project Blue Book.
You mean Rupelt?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you asked about Kenneth Arnold. I think you asked me if Arnold's name was mentioned. You meant why Rupelt's name was
mentioned.
I have to give you the same answer. I just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just didn't come up, but I recall at any time that they would mention him. I didn't know why they would.
Mm-hmm.
It was no case deleted.
Yes. You've already answered the question. Ivan is once again writing me a note here, and he was wondering... Wait a minute. What's this, Ivan? Well, Ivan, just a moment. Do you want to pick this up a moment and finish this up with him? You want to? Yes, sure. Just a moment, Mr. Tunick.
All right.
We have some difficulties here to get, but Ivan would like to talk to you a moment on the beeper phone to get some additional information.
Sure.
Just a moment, sir.
How do you do, sir?
How do you do, Ivan?
Sir, there's one thing I'm very interested in. I noticed that the gentleman, I think, from the Air Force, he kept on saying he never mentioned Kenneth Arnold's name, but said that he was one of the pilots who was looking for a lost plane round about...
Now, wait, you have that a little wrong. It was in my section that the Kenneth Arnold sighting was discussed, not in the Air Force. The Air Force...
Oh, I beg your pardon. I wasn't quite sure which it was.
That's right.
I happened to see it. In other words, because Kenneth Arnold was not there...
That's right, his name was not...
Well, not mentioned, though, I see. But that was the same person you were talking about, the pilot who was looking for the lost plane.
Well,
I
don't want to get into any kind of a legal situation.
I beg your pardon. All right, I know. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have asked that. I just wanted to know if it was the same man, but I understand what you mean. You can't obviously answer that question if you can't answer the other one. Here's John again. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Well, Mr. Tunick, thank you very, very much for
quite all right.
Getting in touch with us.
I thank you for the very kind words you had to say about the program as a whole.
I enjoyed it.
Well, that's very good. We're happy, and we really are very... We're sad that this situation had to come up because we thought it was a good program that the audience would be interested in. And we don't want the audience to feel that they've been cheated in any way.
Fine.
It was an emergency measure, you understand that?
Fine. Thank you very much, Mr. Tunick.
Good night,
sir.
Well, that was the telephone conversation, beeper phone conversation, that I had with Irv Tunick on the morning of January 23rd. Actually, that was the morning after the Armstrong Circle Theater telecast, the one that they had in reference to flying saucers with Major Donald E. Kehoe, and they were supposed to have Kenneth Arnold, but Mr. Arnold did not show. Before I continue along, and believe me, we've got some exciting things for you. Of course, we'll be talking with Major Donald E. Kehoe, Cortland Hastings, Jules B. St. Germain, and we'll get a lot of information. But before we get into that, let me take a moment to talk about... Now, getting back to our discussion of the morning. Kenneth Arnold is the man who really coined the phrase flying saucers. This is back in the year of 1947. And Kenneth Arnold is a very respected person, a man who I might add is considered to be just about tops in his field as not only a private pilot, but also a very keen businessman, and just about everybody in the flying saucer field has great respect for Kenneth Arnold. Now, Mr. Arnold, it had been suggested by Mr. Irv Tunick and Mr. Robert Costello of the Armstrong Circle Theater that he come into New York to participate in this program. And I'd like to add at this time that he was given a check for $250. Just about 3 weeks ago, he sent me that check. It was made out to him. He endorsed it over to the WOR Christmas Fund. He would not accept payment, although it did cost him a considerable amount of money to come in from Boise, Idaho, and he had hotel expenses, and his fee of $250, he turned it over to my favorite charity, which happens to be the WOR Christmas Fund. And I think that that was a large sum, too, $250. So, again, I'd like to just say thanks to Kenneth Arnold for turning that check over to me. Now, the following day, again, January 23rd, I made every effort to get in touch with Kenneth Arnold. I might also say that I tried to get in touch with Major Kehoe, but that seemed to be impossible. I was told that Major Kehoe was not talking. I heard a lot of rumors, but actually Major Kehoe held a press conference, and I did not know about this until, I'd say 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. That is the morning of January 23rd. However, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I was fortunate enough to get in touch with Kenneth Arnold. I might say that I'm very grateful to a lady who made the arrangements for me, and I'm talking about Virginia Belmont. Virginia Belmont owns the Belmont Bird and Kennel Shop in Radio City, and she made the connection for me, giving Mr. Arnold my private phone number. He called me, and I said to him that I would like to talk to him on the beeper phone so that our listeners could understand exactly what happened. And he said he was agreeable, and he permitted me to have his private phone number, and I called him on the phone, and I had the following conversation. So, Tommy, if you will, please, Tommy Reynolds, that particular tape, that beeper telephone conversation that I had with Kenneth Arnold in the afternoon of January 23rd, I'd like the listeners to hear it now.
Hello, Mr. Kenneth Arnold?
That's right.
This is Long John from WOR, sir. I'm very happy to have this opportunity of talking with you. I'm Sorry, though, that you weren't able to join us on the program. But I was wondering, did you hear any of the program that we had on last night in reference to the Armstrong Circle Theater program?
I did, Long John. In fact, I stayed up the entire night to hear the entire program.
Well, believe me, I'm very proud, Mr. Arnold. Actually, we need the listeners, so we've added a couple. Mr. Arnold, I know you're a very busy man, but very frankly, there's a couple of questions I would like to ask. First of all, a Mr. Irving Tunick, who is the writer of that particular program that was on the Armstrong Circle Theater last night, told me during a two-way beeper telephone conversation that the Armstrong people paid for you and Mrs. Arnold to come from Boise, Idaho to New York, and I understand they picked up the tab at the hotel, and that you rehearsed for 2 days, and at the end of that time, in other words, the day of the broadcast or the telecast, you sent a telegram and you failed to appear. Now, is that what happened, Mr. Arnold?
That's right.
In other words, you just failed to appear.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But
would you care to comment on that, sir?
I think... if I am able to give you the background as to what induced me to come to New York,
yes,
you, as well as your listeners, would better understand my position as to not appearing on the program.
Well, we'd certainly like to hear your side of it, Mr. Arnold.
It was represented to me by a long-distance telephone conversation that the program, which was going to appear on the subject of UFO on the Columbia Broadcasting System television network, was to be an honest, straightforward program giving a clear, concise picture of all of the really important knowledge that has been gathered about this subject since my first report of June 24th of 1947.
Mm-hmm. That's the time when you came up with that term, flying saucer. You're the originator of it. Isn't that right, Mr. Arnold?
Not exactly, Long John. The term was actually coined by a United Press correspondent who put the question to me as, how did they fly? And I replied, they flew as if you would take a saucer and skip it across the water,
mm-hmm,
in a rough, erratic fashion. That's how the name, I think, became, as we look at it today, UFO or flying saucer.
Well, I still think, Mr. Arnold, you could take a bow for it. Well, let's get back into now. In other words, when you were planning to appear on the Armstrong Circle Theater, you were under the impression that you would be able to bring out all of the things that you had acquired as far as knowledge is concerned about this phenomena known as flying saucers since June 24th, 1947, right up to and including this day of... January 23rd, 1958. Is that about the size of it?
To a major extent, it was, Long John,
mm-hmm,
except that being that the subject of flying saucers has become such a complex problem since the time I first made my report, it would have been impossible to project in a short time all of the pertinent facts that have been gathered. Though I was led to believe, and it was entirely at my choice, to appear on the program if I was satisfied that it was as it was represented to me in Boise, Idaho. the letter I received from these parties that induced me to make this long trip, dated of December 31st of 1957, assured me that before I left Boise, Idaho, and I will quote from the letter, as soon as we have the first draft of the strip ready, we will forward it to you. I never received a draft of this script, but was assured over the telephone that they wanted me to come, and that they knew that I would be more than happy to appear. The program, there was no question as to the representation, and that they would discuss that with me when I came to New York and had a chance to see what was going to be portrayed.
Mm-hmm. Who signed this letter that was mailed on December 31st, 1957?
The letter is of on the stationery of the Talent Associates Limited, 41 East 50th Street, New York 22, New York, and it is signed by Mardette Edwards of the editorial department.
I see. So you decided, after talking to them on the phone, after receiving that letter dated December 31st, 1957, that you would make the trip to New York. In other words, you had confidence in them. Is that right, Mr. Reiner?
I had all the confidence that I could be assured of over the telephone, and though I've turned down many requests of this type, it seemed as though that this was going to be projected as represented, and I was anxious, of course, to see that the true story, as far as we know, was being portrayed for public interest.
Now, Mr. Arnold, when you did arrive here in New York, I assume that you went into conference with Mr. Robert Costello, the producer, and with Mr. Irving Tunick, the writer. Is that true, sir?
That's true.
And you saw the script that they had prepared for you?
I saw the script that they had prepared. Every participant in the program, it seemed, was continually changing everything in the script, so actually, no one, I don't believe, really knew what the final outcome of it was going to be.
I see. In other words, even after the second day of rehearsal, you were not confident that this was going to be the last and final draft. Is that right, sir?
Right.
Uh-huh. Now, when did you make up your mind that you would not participate in this program, Mr. Arnold?
I made my final decision, I think, about 1 o'clock of the day of the program of January 26th, or I mean January 27th, or
22nd. January.
I'm sorry.
January 22nd.
That's about Wednesday, the day of the program.
Yeah, about 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes.
Now that's only a couple of days ago, sir. What actually made you make that last-minute decision at that time? Did you see a revised edition of the script that you didn't like or something?
The entire program had not actually been reviewed as of the day before it was to be projected. The Secretary of Research and Development for our government had never appeared, and we didn't know whether his script was going to be as printed or whether it was going to be entirely changed. And even the people that I talked to on the program that had to do with it were unable to give me a definite answer about that.
I see. I understand from Mr. Tunick, who spoke to me on our beeper telephone, and I think you heard that conversation because you were listening to the program.
Yes.
He mentioned about a telegram that he did not read, but he was aware of the fact that it had been received, evidently, by the producer, Robert Costello. I wonder if you happen to have a copy of that telegram with you that you could read to me, or if you feel that it's of A personal nature, certainly, Mr. Arnold, I wouldn't insist that you read it. I'd let you pass judgment on it.
I can't very well say that it is of too personal a nature because the telegram stated at least my principles as to some background as to why I was not going to appear on the program, and copies of this telegram were also sent to two of the large New York newspapers, as well as a representative of Newsweek magazine, Rod Gander.
Do you know if a copy of the telegram appeared in any one of the two New York newspapers? Are you...
That I don't know. The papers, they get out here. I'm not in New York City itself right
yes.
now.
Don't mention where you are either, sir, because I have not divulged to our listeners your phone number, because I know many of them who are fans of yours would like to be able to contact you, and I know that you'd like to get some sleep. So don't mention the town that you're in, please.
All right.
Now, Mr. Arnold, would you be kind enough to read the telegram to me?
The copy of the telegram that you have requested as the date and the time was January 22nd, 1958, at 2:44 p.m. in the afternoon. It was sent to Mr. Robert Costello, Mr. Ivan Tunick, in care of the Armstrong Circle Theater, CBS Studio, 58, 841 9th Avenue, corner of 55th Street, New York. It is as follows. The persons or agencies who project information of national interest have a serious responsibility. A correctly informed public is one of the greatest assets this nation can have. This is to inform you that I will not be a participant on any program that obviously misrepresents and distorts facts available on any subject broadcast for the public interest, nor could I allow any photographs or material properly copyrighted to be used on any program without written permission of the owners. Signed, Kenneth Arnold, and there is a P.S. I am not making an appearance on any television program on January 22nd, 1958.
Well, I don't think you pulled any punches, Mr. Arnold. I was wondering if... I'm quite interested. I'm not really great at shorthand, but I've tried to make some quick notes on this just to question you about. I hope I have it down correctly. However, on the tape, it is correct, sir. You mentioned about not wanting to participate in a program that I think you said misrepresents or distorts facts.
Right.
I'm paraphrasing. Naturally, I'm not quoting you accurately, sir. Do you feel that the program... First of all, did you see the program last night, sir?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel after viewing the program that there was a certain amount of misrepresentation and distortion of facts?
In this respect, mainly, you didn't quite read the part of the telegram as I projected it to you properly. In this way, I said, this is the part of the telegram, this is to inform you that I will not be a participant on any program that obviously misrepresents and distorts facts available on any subject.
I see.
Now, in other words, I know a great deal of demonstrable facts on this subject that were completely ignored, even when I sent to the studio photographs and photostats of things that I know and could substantially prove to be true.
I see. Mr. Arnold, do you have any comment to make on the fact that Major Kehoe, the last part of his statement was cut off the air. Do you have any comment on that? Or are you aware of the fact that it was cut off?
Yes.
This was done intentionally, you know.
Pardon?
This was done intentionally. This was not an accident. This was not faulty equipment.
I realize that.
What do you think about that, sir?
Mr. Kehoe, as anyone participating on a program, is at a terrifically disadvantage, or a terrific disadvantage, I should say, due to the fact that you have to sign a release if you appear on the program stating that everything that is going to be stated, of which I'm sure Mr. Kehoe didn't know the entire story, because I don't believe anyone knew, at least I couldn't find out, he had to sign this if he wanted to be a participant. I refused to sign mine because I had not, as prearranged the agreement between the program directors and myself, given the opportunity to actually see the entire program projected before it went on the air.
Are you familiar with any of the details about Captain Repelt? According to many of the program listings in the newspapers, it was announced that Repelt would appear on that program. Do you know if he arrived in New York and possibly decided at the last minute not to participate in the same manner that you did, Mr. Arnold?
I don't know anything about Mr. Repelt. My impression, and I read that Clarence S. Childs, an Eastern Airline captain, was going to appear only by reading it in the paper. I think it was the Tribune. And I learned at the studio, I can't quote who it was that told me, it was one of the officials there, I assumed, that Eastern Airlines, which is, I think, managed by Eddie Rickenbacker, refused to let him come and be on the program. Now, that, of course, was just hearsay. I had no way of verifying it.
Mm-hmm. I see. In other words, then, I think possibly we could say that although we all believe in freedom of speech, evidently, freedom of speech is something that we can have after approval by the authorities.
Well, it looks as though that through no fault of my own, I have placed myself, or I have been placed, in a very precarious position, and I hesitate in making a remark on that. I don't feel in any way that I'm an authority on the principles of what is represented in our Constitution. I interpret them, I think, like lots of people, the best way I can. And my impression, of course, is that these things, anything that a man wishes to say, he has the right to say it as long as it in no way causes injury to anyone else, of which can be settled by due process of law. Now, my telegram in no way incriminates, I don't believe, anyone. I simply stated my principles, and my principles pretty well established my position as far as being a participant in a program that was for the public interest. And I wanted to be absolutely sure of the facts before I subjected myself as a representative of thousands of pilots to, well, what should I say? It wasn't whether Kenneth Arnold was important at all. It was the fact that I didn't believe that the program was treated quite fairly. And I don't believe that it probably was Mr. Costello or Mr. Tunick's fault in any way. It was just a circumstance that arose probably due to the fact that there has been so much controversy about this subject, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I am quite familiar with it. Mr. Arnold, no doubt you heard Professor Menzel's comments about what he thought about pilots. Do you remember that comment?
Yes.
Would you care to say anything about it?
I received a phone call. How he got my number, I'm not sure, this morning.
From Professor Menzel?
No, from one of the prominent pilots.
I see.
Of one of the major airlines congratulating me on my stand.
Uh-huh.
And apparently, Mr. Menzel's ridicule of, or criticism of, indirectly, of course, of pilots who are responsible every day for hundreds, probably thousands, of our lives as we travel the airlines, wasn't too popular.
I can imagine. One last question, sir. I'm very, very appreciative of the fact that you've given us so much of your valuable time. Do you actually believe that the so-called flying saucers are interplanetary craft?
I don't think that you quite put your question properly.
Well, supposing you rephrase my question and answer it, sir.
Pardon?
Supposing you rephrase my question and answer it in your own way, sir.
What these things are that we are seeing in our skies, I don't believe it's anything to become hysterical about. Let me try to put it this way. If I can put it so that the conclusions, if I were to come to any conclusions, which of course would have to be, I think, temporary on anyone that I know of part on this subject of things in the sky that are seen, would have to be based on the process of elimination, and that is that it has been pretty well demonstrated to me for nearly 10 years that it is not a product of our air forces or of the air forces or ingenuity of any other country on this globe. And the only conclusion that I could come to cautiously would be that it must be of an extraterrestrial origin. Whether it comes from another planet, as we interpret as planet, is something that I certainly couldn't make a statement, because that is something that I would be unable to prove.
Mr. Arnold, thank you very, very much for being kind enough to talk to me on the beeper phone. I'm only sorry that you were not able to join us on the party line in person during your stay in New York, but we sincerely hope that if you do come back to New York at any time, that you'll know that the welcome mat is out in front, and you're more than welcome to be on, and we'll be proud to have you.
Thank you very kindly, Long John. I'm sorry to have been so cautious, but I do feel the weight of responsibility in making a statement that would be incorrect, and I'm doing the very best I can.
Thank you again. Goodbye, sir.
Goodbye.
Well, that was the beeper telephone conversation that I had with Kenneth Arnold, the man that coined the phrase flying saucers back in the year of 1947. The way I said that, you might think I had that telephone conversation in 1947. Actually, it was in 1958, January 23rd, 1958, just a short time ago. Before we continue on with the discussion this morning, and I sincerely hope that maybe you'll call some of your friends and neighbors who are interested in this, because we are now talking about a very, very serious subject. And I think you heard the opening statement that Major Kehoe made about what would happen if we had members of the Air Force in the studio with us. We don't, so you can expect something very, very exciting. Let me first of all take a moment to talk about aches and pains. A new drugless method that helps mental massage. And once you try the unit, I think... This is Long John with the party line. Did I just identify the station? I did? Well, I'm so happy, so proud to be on WI that I've done it twice. And if I were getting scaled for it, I'd get another $7.50. So what? Tommy Reynolds, my producer out there. He got very concerned that I doubled up on the station identification. Say, let me just briefly remind you. Send your name and address into... Now, we're going to be talking with Major Kehoe. It's Major Donald E. Kehoe, director of NICAP, National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. And for the people who would like to contact that organization, I might also add it's a non-profit organization. You are more than welcome to take advantage of this address. Just write to NICAP, N-I-C-A-P, NICAP. The address, 1536 Connecticut Avenue, Washington 6, D.C. Now, we'll be talking with Major Donald E. Kehoe, Jules B. St. Germain, Cortland Hastings, and Charles Leadham. Mr. Leadham is a TV producer and an author. But first, we're going to break away for a few minutes, maybe 5 or 6 minutes. We're going to enjoy a little coffee out in the kitchen. Incidentally, you know, we're not in New York tonight. We're out in the transmitter of WOR. That's located in Carteret, New Jersey. And we're going to be enjoying a little coffee and a little of the Danish pastry, and then we'll be back with you. And I hope you call some of your friends and neighbors, because you'll possibly have the opportunity, maybe it'll be your first time, to hear Major Donald E. Kehoe. We'll be back in just a few minutes.